This episode of The Honeydew is brought to you by Liquid IV and Keeps. More on that later. Let's get into the do.
The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to The Honeydew, y'all. We're over here doing it in the Nightpan Studios. I am Ryan Sickler, Ryan Sickler on all social media, ryansickler.com. And I want to say thank you to every one of you for subscribing, for the messages, the emails, all of it. This community is growing, and I absolutely love your fucking metal. I love it. I love that you all are over here just laughing at the shit thrown at us. It's a good time. It's the best therapy, and I'm so glad you're on board. Make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel, and you'll get audio every Monday, video on Tuesdays. And if you got to have more episodes, subscribe to the Patreon. It's $5 a month. If you sign up for your year, you get over a month of free episodes. And that community is just, man, the fucking stories that are coming out of that show. You just go look. Go look at the promos on my IG. It's nuts. Cast a line out to all y'all, and y'all haven't let me down. If you or someone you know has that story that has to be heard, please submit it to honeydewpodcast@gmail.com. Hopefully we get to do an episode with you. You do not need to be a Patreon member. So submit it. Hopefully we get the chance to do an episode together. Now, you know, we record here at the Santa Monica Music Center. And working with this, oh, Gus is making me laugh. Working with these kids right now on Outreach Through the Arts, at-risk kids with the Santa Monica Police Department. And, you know, we're teaching them how to podcast, editing, cameras, everything that goes into bringing a show like this out there. And I got to tell you, they're loving it. We're loving it. So I'll keep you up to date on that. We had the chief of police, Santa Monica Police, in here. She was in here. Black lady, by the way. What? That lady, yeah, setting. She's over there making history. So she was in here. They're excited about the program. I'm excited about it. Just something I want to tell you all about.
How many of these kids do you think are going to flip it into an OnlyFans?
We haven't taught them about that yet.
No, they'll
We're
figure
only
it out.
Three classes deep. So, real quick, you know what we do here? We highlight the lowlights. These
and
are the stories.
You're highlighting a lowlight.
These are the stories behind the storytellers. And as you can see, ladies and gentlemen, our guest this week, Russell Peters, y'all.
Hey, look at that. I got the clap from you.
Thank you for being here, brother.
Thanks, Ryan. It's good what you're doing to these kids, or for these kids, rather.
Thank you. Well said.
Yeah, you got to say, the words are very important. Yeah. Doing for and doing to are very different things.
Very different.
Yeah, things. Doing for is what you're doing, and doing to is what the Catholic Church does.
That's right. Thank you. Thank you. Why I left the Catholic Church.
Me too.
Before we get into your life, your stories, please promote everything and anything. You have a new podcast coming out?
New podcast, Culturally Canceled on iHeartRadio. It's just a hang, basically. We do it in my backyard. We sit around, we drink, we smoke cigars, we talk shit. And it's, you know, we've had all kinds of different – I like to put three people on at a time just to fuck up the energy in the room. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like – so, you know, like, who did I have? I had Kangol Kid from UTFO.
Okay.
Smooth B from Nice and Smooth. Lord Finesse and myself was, like, I think the very first one we did. We just sat around and talked about hip-hop. And then
so you are an old hip hop head.
Oh yeah,
you
yeah,
go
yeah.
way
yeah,
deep yeah, yeah. on that.
Then we had one with Cedric the Entertainer, and I had Sean Porter, Showtime Sean Porter on with me on that one. And then Sean's dad Kenny Porter was there, and I think Ruben Paul dropped in. It's just loose, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's hang like it's really kind of like if you were to wonder what happens in my backyard and we're sitting around talking. That's basically we're recording it now.
All right, and where is it again? iHeart?
iHeart Radio.
All right.
Culturally Canceled with Russell Peters.
Any live performance dates at this point right now?
Yeah, I don't want to brag, guys, but I got a bunch of dates. They're on my website, russellpeters.com.
All right.
I don't know when this is going to air, so...
in a couple weeks.
April's going to get canceled. Yeah. I know that because...
You want to wait till after April? Yeah.
No, well, April the dates are getting canceled. I got to do something in Canada. So, but after that, revisit.
Well, again, thank you for being here. I told you what we do over here. At the end, by the way, I forgot to tell you, you're a first-time guest. After we talk about what we're going to talk about, I'm going to ask you what advice you would give your 16-year-old self, all right?
Yeah.
So let's start. Tell me. Give me yours is a life story.
Mine's a life story. I got a lot of years on me. What do you want to start with? Where do you want to start?
Well, you're born Toronto.
Born in Toronto in 1970.
And are you an only child?
No, I have an older brother. He's 6 years older than me. Okay. So from the age – and my parents, we were latchkey kids. So from, you know, from the time I was born, my mom and dad both worked, and they both – they weren't professionals. You know what I mean?
I heard somebody the other day use latchkey, and they were like, yeah, my mom would pick me up. I'm like, whoa, what?
Yeah, yeah.
Ain't no pickup. You get your fucking self home with your own key, and you go in the house and you're responsible
you
for your
picked
motherfucking
up, you,
self. I was a latchkey kid.
Yeah,
nobody was picking us up. Matter of fact, they rode right the fuck by while we were walking home.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. My brother and I would take the bus. I was 4. He was 10.
Damn.
We would get on the bus together. Public transit, not.
Can you imagine if somebody put their 4-year-old on a public bus in
Toronto
right now?
Oh, my God. You'd lose your kids.
You would lose your kids.
Yeah, so it's a weird world we're living in now. And I don't remember anything happening to kids back then. I don't remember that
no
many
close
kids
close calls with you or your brother.
No, nobody wanted a brown kid. We're low on the totem pole.
Yeah, you'll be stuck with them.
How am I gonna help this one?
They'll be stuck with you.
Is that your kid? That's my pet monkey. It just throws me a banana.
Oh, shit.
So yeah, you know, for age of 4, my brother and I would take that. You'd take me to school. We were in the same school back then. And then we would stop on the way home and get a jumbo burger. It was called Jumbo Burgers. We'd stop there, and then we'd have to walk because it was just far enough from the house where a bus – waiting for the bus wouldn't make sense.
Right.
And but still far enough where you're like, fuck, I got to do this walk now.
That's a lot on a 10-year-old too.
I'm
a lot
4.
Of responsibility.
My brother's always been very responsible. So that was good. That worked out well because if it was me and him, we would have been fucked.
And did you grow closer because of it?
He's my manager now.
Still, so you're still good to go.
Oh, we're still good, yeah.
No shit.
Matter of fact, we FaceTimed each other today. Me, him, and my mom staying in my house right now. So
that's nice.
It was nice, little 3 of us on the FaceTime. That's good.
So you grow up like that. Now, what sort of student are you?
Terrible. I'm a terrible student. So
Why?
We moved from Toronto
okay.
in 1974 or 5, 74, 75. We moved from Toronto to Brampton, which is the 20 minutes outside of the city. And it's a working-class, blue-collar town. And
what did your parents do?
My dad worked in a chicken factory when we moved to Brampton. Otherwise, he worked in a slaughterhouse in Toronto.
So no, he was killing something.
He worked in a beef slaughterhouse, and he was a meat inspector. And then we moved to Brampton, where my dad worked at the chicken plant. We did the same shit with chickens. And my mom worked. My mom ended up working at the Kmart.
Y'all had Kmart in Canada?
Yeah, I don't know.
I didn't know they were international.
Yeah, they're everywhere. Yeah. The only thing that's not international is fucking IHOP. Ironically, I mean, fucking false ass advertising.
That's the fucking truth. Oh, shit. And what's it like growing up in a town like that? Were you guys middle class, lower middle class, low income?
Working class. Yeah, okay. Working class. Like there was no extras. Mm-hmm. You had what you needed.
That was
you didn't have no extras.
Well said, yes.
You know what I mean? It was like, yeah, I had shoes. I might have been falling apart, but you had fucking shoes.
Yeah.
And if they did fall apart, then you would get new shoes, you know? And so this neighborhood we moved to was a little townhouse complex. And very racist. Very, very racist.
Very white racist?
Well, in Canada in the 70s, it was a lot of racism towards Indian people. Black people getting it, but not anywhere near what we were getting.
Really?
Like we were below everything. Because we were easy targets. We're small. You know, they have funny accents. I didn't have one, obviously, but I couldn't figure out what the fuck was happening. They would call us Packies.
Okay. This is what you're seeing at 4, 5, 6 years old?
Yeah. I don't understand what's happening.
Right.
I'm 4 and a half, 5 years old. I'm like,
is your brother fighting or anything like
that?
Well,
my brother's kind of figure it out. He's like, he's 11 now. He's like, I don't know what the fuck's going on either. So, we moved to this townhouse complex and, literally, I'm a 5-year-old kid. I go to the park. I don't know. I take a piss in the park. You know what I mean? I peed on.
Do that.
Yeah, and they were like, "Fucking wrong with you, you fucking packy." And it's grown people talking to me like this.
Oh, really? These are adults.
These are adults doing this.
Shit.
These aren't kids. These are adults.
To a little 5-year-old.
They don't give a shit. I was a cute fucking kid too, to be honest.
I bet you
were. But I didn't know I was cute because so many people shit on you for so long. You don't know anything good about yourself at that point. So I dealt with a lot of that. And as you got older, it got worse. Like because you kind of got beaten down at a young age, your brain goes, oh, you have no recourse in this. You're just going to have to take this. You know what I mean? So
can I ask you a question? Because obviously I've never had consistent racism, you know, because used against me because I'm white and my privilege. but, you know, do you get to a point, and I don't want to say because that you get used to it, but you said you accepted it. You actually were like, you weren't going to fight back, or no, you just knew that no matter what you did, it didn't matter.
No, this if you fought back, here. You were going to get beat up worse. You were. Because you were getting beat up for no reason. Like, you would go to the park. Eventually, after having a good time with the other kids, somebody would either spit on you or punch you in the head.
Fuck. Kick How you, old whatever. Are you the first time you had any kind of physical altercation?
Right when we moved into the townhouse complex, I'm riding my bicycle in the neighborhood, and I get down the street to the stop sign. There's an older white man watering his lawn. I'm a five-year-old kid. I stop at the stop sign. I don't know why. Because when you're a kid on a bike, you want to pretend you're driving a car. So you see a stop sign, you stop. And this white man's watering his lawn. I go, hi. And he sprays me with his hose. Get the fuck out of here, Packy.
Damn.
Yeah. Grown man. Cut to, that was 1975, cut to 1984, 85.
So wait, sorry, your first sort of
– Not my first, but he was definitely like one of the memorable ones.
But that's an adult. That's not a kid your age.
Yeah, that was the one where I was like, oh, that motherfucker.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I see who you are. Anyway, cut to like 10 years later. I don't live in that townhouse
anymore. I'm skidding all in your yard later, motherfucker.
Oh, yeah, it's even better. So 10 years later, my friends lived in the buildings behind – there was like across the street was like these – apartment building, so my friends still lived there, so and we had moved, so but you still had to walk through my old townhouse to get to my where I had moved to. So I'm walking home one night from my friend's place, me and him, he's walking back with me, and that guy's house was on the corner, and as we're walking back, I go, look at that motherfucker sitting in his living room, and he had a big window. I picked up a brick, I threw that shit right through his fucking window, and
we took off,
motherfucker. And that's funny because I saw his wife, maybe.
Lawn looks good, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Damn, you threw a brick.
Man, fuck that guy.
They didn't call the police or anything like that?
I don't know what they did. We were gone. They had done whatever they wanted to do, but I don't know. I was gone.
You saw his wife?
Saw his wife in the mall that I grew up, like in the hometown that I grew up in. Maybe I saw her maybe like, I want to say like 14 years ago. And I was like, I was with my mom, and I go, oh, look at this fucking bitch is still here. And my mom goes, Russell, stop that. I go, no, you know who her fucking dirty husband was.
I love that you hold that grudge.
Oh, yeah, because he was a grown-ass man.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
God damn. Anyway. So at what age do you start to develop the comedy muscle that is probably protecting your ass beat?
At that age is when I started doing it, because I was like, I think I've always been innately a happy person. It's like it's something you're born with, either you are or you're not.
Yeah.
And, you know, people can try and fuck with it, and they can.
And they do.
And they do, but you can't take it away. You can, you know, stifle it a little bit, but that's about it. But I used to use comedy to get out of situations. And, you know, and then from the age of four, all the kids I associated with were the black kids, because they were the ones not doing anything to me. They were the ones, we were literally equals. We were just, it wasn't even like, oh, he's black, let me talk to him. It just like didn't occur to me. I was like, hey, these guys don't bully me. I'm going to go hang out with them. And then we would end up doing dumb shit together. And
well, I'm guessing, skin color wasn't a thing for you. You knew it was the way you were being treated, but for you, you didn't give a shit who anyone looked like.
Right. It didn't occur to me.
Right.
Because – but it's funny because I remember I didn't know what a fucking Packy was when I would hear it. They go, fucking Packy's coming. Like, and I would run with them. Like, I'd run into the park, like, fucking Packy. And they'd all run, and I'd run too. And they think I'm chasing them. And I'm like, I don't want the fucking Packy to get me either. I thought it was like a ghost. And I came home and go, Mom, what's a Packy? And my mom goes, we're not from Pakistan. We're from India. Tell them that. I go, I'm not.
They don't give a fuck.
I'm like, I'm not going to correct them. That's not going to be the
Listen,
win.
Let me correct your racism so you can do it properly.
If you're going to insult me, do it properly. Be accurate.
Please be accurate with your racism.
Yeah, that's probably why I do the comedy that I do, because I'm when I do talk about specific races or cultures or nationalities, I'm very specific with it, and I think that comes from people doing broad stroke racism on me. I was like, listen, I want this to be right.
Yeah, well, I'm watching you out here with Lana, with knowing everything she's talking about, these countries, dialects, languages.
Yeah.
Okay, so do you remember having conversations other than that with your mom and dad about this? You know, maybe their experiences of racism.
Well, my dad.
Racism isn't new.
No. See, my mom's very fair-skinned. She could pass. She's not much darker than you.
She is Indian.
Yeah, she's from India, born and raised.
Not much darker than
me. Not much darker. She just looks like me, but fair skin. I'll show you a picture just so you get an idea. I just posted it on my Instagram, too, as a matter of fact. Let's go to that picture. Let's go to the tape, kids. Okay, so that's mom. That's her with a tan.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Right?
Uh-huh.
It just looks like me if you really look at it. Watch. I had to zoom in. You got to zoom in. It's on Instagram, so you got to use two fingers. Right. Use two fingers on. Use two fingers on my
two
mom.
Two fingers on you, bro. There you go. I got two fingers on your mom, bro.
And then my dad was a little bit darker, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
So anyway, my dad dealt with that shit too. But when he moved to Canada, my dad was an English major, so he always wanted to be a writer.
What took them to Canada?
An airplane. they wanted to get out of India because the type of Indian we are, we're Anglo-Indians, we're mixed. And we're mixed with British. And Anglo-Indians marry.
Please, educate us on
Anglo-Indians used to marry Anglo-Indians because they were the same mix. So there's some very famous Anglo-Indians.
And the mix is British-Indian?
British and Indian. The father had to have been British. The mother had to have been Indian.
Okay.
And if the mother was British and the father was Indian, that's a Eurasian.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
right.
But Eurasians didn't have much of the cultural shit happen. The Anglo-Indians were born and raised in India, but their first language is English, and all of their cultural things are British. So growing up, when I'd go to India, everybody spoke English because all my family spoke English. Mm-hmm. And at 4 o'clock, it was tea time.
Okay.
And they would want snacks like scones and shit like that. You know what I mean? So that's what I knew. And we'd eat Indian food, obviously, because that's the food around. And then they learn whatever language they need to learn for where they live. So my mom grew up in Calcutta. She learned how to speak Bengali because that's where she was born and raised. But English was still her first language. My dad was born in Bombay. And so he learned how to speak the language there, which is Marathi, and he spoke that. He knew how to speak. He knew how to speak it. And they both knew how to speak Hindi, which is the national language. But English was their first language. And even when they would speak the other languages, they still weren't that good at it.
But they could communicate.
Yeah, they could communicate. They could understand it.
Do you speak more than one language?
No. I fake it through every language. But I can make you think I can speak your fucking language. Like, I know enough of each language where I make you go, I don't think we should speak it anymore. He's going to figure it out.
Outside.
He's going to figure this out. That's all I want to do is make you uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's great.
Eh? You comfortable with your language? Well, I know what part of the words were. That's all you need to do to throw people off.
What about extended family? Do you have grandparents or anyone that's over here?
No,
or just
no, no.
Your
my dad, shit, if my dad was alive, he'd be 96. So no.
So how old was he when he had you then?
He was 45 when he
45,
had me.
45, okay, a little older. Yeah.
Yeah, he was 45. So me and my brother took after him because I had my first kid at 40.
Yeah,
and my second one at 49.
49's the second one?
Yeah. I do what I got to do.
How do your knees feel? How's your back and your knees? That's what always hurts my
head. He's 48. I was 48 and a half. Going to be 49. No, I do jiu-jitsu, so my back is fine. Knees are fine. My feet hurt. It's a little weird, but it's my own issue.
So take me through just now high school. What is high school like
Okay,
for you?
So, you know, that's 1975. We go through grade school. I'm in Catholic school for 9 years.
Oh, you are?
Senior kindergarten to eighth grade.
Damn.
They have a senior kindergarten in Canada. They have junior kindergarten, senior kindergarten.
Two kindergarten years?
Yeah. So it's basically what's the first one you do here before kindergarten?
TK, they call it. Pre-K or
– Yeah, pre-K. Yes, so pre-K and – so, you know, same shit, different name. And then you guys say eighth grade and we say grade eight. It's the same.
Okay.
Same shit. It's the same way Lana's family, the West Indian people, will say curry chicken – and Indians will say chicken curry.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's how we know the distinction. By the way, they say, like, oh, they're one of those. Okay. Oh, you were I got you. Okay.
Chicken curry?
Yeah.
Hide your wall.
Yeah. They want curry chicken? Motherfucker, I know what you're doing. And their curry is a different color. So we're like, that's how Indian people are going to go, wrong color. Don't know what you've done here, but it tastes good. Anyway, side note. Okay, so I get through 9 years of Catholic school. I deal with a lot of things during that time.
Like what?
Just a lot of racism and just getting beaten.
Even from the priest and shit like that? Did you ever get any of that?
No, but even at a young age, I knew I was an atheist because I would go to church and I was like, this doesn't make sense.
Thank you.
You weren't allowed to ask questions, and that made me even more. I'm like, well, if I can't ask questions, then how the fuck do you – if you can't give me an answer, you're supposed to believe. No, motherfucker, I do not.
Yeah.
I need –
and if God's everywhere, why do I got to be here Sunday?
Yeah, yeah. Why does God need my fucking money?
Yeah.
And why isn't God stopping you from fucking that kid over there?
And that one. And that one. Yeah, yeah. And that one.
And I kind of felt bad because they never fucked me. I was like – I was a very cute fucking kid. I don't know what their problem was.
You said it.
They didn't want the brown one, yeah. They wanted the brown stain, just not the brown kid. This is one of my favorite memes. If you want to share that, you can.
Good things come in small packages. Oh, my God. Oh, shit. I assume you've seen... Oh, now I can't even think of the documentary with the whole the Baltimore documentary. I'm embarrassed. I can't think of it. The nuns with the whole priest that exposed the Catholic Church having sex with boys, but children. There's so many girls. What the fuck's it called?
The fuck a boy documentary. I don't know. What
it's not just boys. That's the thing.
Oh wow, they were fucking girls.
They were fucking children. Yes.
I know that's weird. Though.
Yes, children.
I don't know why.
Didn't matter what.
I don't understand that fucking obsession. As a father, you go, what the fuck is wrong with you? You have kids?
Yeah, I'm a 6-year-old daughter.
Yeah, so you get it?
Yeah, totally.
You look at them, you go. I
got it before I had a kid. Though.
Yeah, me too. I've always been into mature porn women. And,
it just came to me. Keepers. The Keepers.
Okay.
Just came to me.
Where is it?
Netflix.
Okay.
And it's great. And you absolutely need to watch it. It is eye-opening. And I know some people in it. My mother's connected some people in it. A friend of mine's mom went to that school and knew this teacher. So they murdered this nun because she was going to out them. And they fucking wiped her ass out.
Right.
And then they start talking to all these people that have real evidence. Like the gravedigger that had the priest come to him and say, bury my porn here. Well, he dug it up for him. And it's just stacks and pictures of
kitties.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Yep. That's so much proof. And
literally,
they all walked scot-free. And they show you how they just moved them, not across the country, like from this parish to this one, 5 blocks down the street.
Yeah.
So I'm with
you on it. This happened to me last year. It was the daddy-daughter dance at my daughter's school. And so the fathers, we take a bunch of the fathers, like 12 of us, will take our daughters to dinner on like a date, you know. So and the daughters will sit at one table, the fathers will sit at another table. So I get there maybe about 15 minutes late, which is my MO. there's one seat left at the table for me right here. And at the head of the table is the priest from the school.
Oh, no.
And I sit down and I go, this is going to be fun. And so we're having dinner, and the guy sitting across from me is like a real kiss-ass guy. So he starts saying, you know, Father, I got away from the church, but when I started coming back around, you know, I realized how much I'm like – and I'm like, this motherfucker right here. I'm just thinking – I'm drinking too. So I'm like – I'm looking around. I'm like – and I'm elbowing the guy, but I'm like, this motherfucker right here. And then he's like, you know, and it was, you know, that I remember when I was in school, the nuns were so mean and they used to hit us and they were really mean. And then the priest goes, yeah, the Catholic Church, the church has changed. The church has changed a lot ago. Yeah, now they just fuck kids.
You son of a.
And the priest goes,
could you imagine being one of the good Catholic priests? Everywhere you go, you got to hear him. You ain't ever not going to hear
him. And that priest recognized me, obviously, but because about 6 months earlier, I think it was 6 months earlier, maybe 6 months to a year before that, my ex-wife wanted my daughter to get baptized because she wasn't baptized. And I didn't want to go. And she was like, you have to go. They won't do it if your father's not there. I go, well, what if the father's fucking dead? What do you do then? Dig one up? Like, no, I don't want to go. And she's like, you have to come or they're not going to. I'm like, fine. So I showed up in a Wu-Tang Clan sweatshirt and a baseball hat.
After baptism.
Yeah. And I'm standing there like this when the priest is like, and now you are. And then Jesus said, I go, no, he didn't. And he's like, and everyone's looking at me. And then they go, please make a cross, sign of the cross on your daughter's head. So everyone, my ex-wife has to do it, her parents. And I go,
meh. You do your signature.
I just went like this one. Meh.
Give me my
and the priest goes like this. Okay. You know, if you want to kick her out of the school, I have no problem with it.
Bro.
So, yeah, you know, that's where I was at. Anyway.
So, eighth grade. Now you're going to high school. Is this public school?
Yeah, so eighth grade. Yeah. And I was supposed to go Catholic school. I didn't want to because I didn't want to wear a uniform because I'd already started breakdancing and I wanted to be cool. So, cut to 1984 now.
Yeah.
I'm already breakdancing for about a year and a half already.
What do you mean? Like on a team or competing
in the
streets?
I was into hip hop. I was already, I'm on a B-boy. I would walk to school with my boom box.
You would? You carry the
every
box?
Every fucking day I would do it. And I was a little kid.
To?
I was listening to Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five on that. Yeah. And then my brother would end up with like these mixtapes and I'd play those too. But anyway, I'm playing all this shit, walking to school, blasting it. And then I'd walk by the French teacher with, and I'd play that part. Je m'appelle Melly Mel. Don't want a lot of cheap mademoiselles. And I was like. So you cut to 1984, summer, September 1984, I start ninth grade. I'll show you what I look like. I was born in, my birthday is in September, so I was already in school, but this is a picture from me on my birthday in 1984. I'm turning 14. That's what I look like at 14.
Hold on a fucking minute.
1984, kids. 1984. I begged my.
That is bad. Hey, dude, you look like fucking out of. You look like Breaking. You look like you're out of Breaking.
Well,
like
that's
Turbo.
The problem. I ended up. I saw Breaking before I saw Beat Street. And when I saw Beat Street, I go, yo, that's the fucking cool look.
Yeah, Beat Street.
But I didn't know where to
street.
Get that.
Yeah.
So I was like mixing it with Karate Kid and fucking Breaking. And I begged my dad for that Thriller jacket. It was $99 and it was leather and it was fucking. And $99 in 1984 is a lot of fucking money.
Yeah.
I wore that jacket once or twice, got made fun of, and never wore it again. And I, to this day. 37 years later, I still feel bad that I wasted my dad's money on that fucking jacket. And that's fucking guilt right there.
That is guilt. That is guilt.
Because he didn't have $100. It's a lot of fucking money, and he bought it for me. And I didn't think he would buy it for me. I should have got the Beat It jacket. Now, the Beat It jacket was a little too out there, but the Thriller
that
jacket
was way out there. It's so funny you say that, man, because I was not a fan of Michael Jackson, the clothes he wore. I just wasn't. I don't know. Maybe I was.
Yeah, but you're younger than me.
I figured it, but I just knew that dude was weird. Okay. Chimpanzees and kids and shit. And I'm thinking about the Catholic Church. I'm like, well, how's this guy any different? So my grandmother, I'll never forget. And again, she didn't have me either, but she bought me this pair of black parachute pants.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, zippers all over the
place. Oh, yeah. I had those. That's what I'm wearing in that picture, actually. I'm wearing black baggy pants with a zip down the side with white mesh. So you could zip it up or you could zip it down. But I would always have it down because I want you to see my white mesh.
I hung those motherfuckers up in the closet and never, ever wore them. Really? And I still, to this day, I feel bad about that too. Yeah. It was like that Christmas present. She thought it was cool. She went out and got me these things. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, fuck this shit. I got my Chucks and my jeans. I'm good.
No,
you know?
I had my karate slippers on because they were good for sliding around.
The Bruce Lee ones, the little black ones.
Yeah, with the plastic sole.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because they were like $5.
What was your like go-to move? What was the one where people – you would do it and people were like, oh, okay, this guy knows what he's doing.
I used to do this one shuffle, but I had to stop because my knee started to swell up because I was trying to do this really fast shuffle on the ground, and I ended up doing this thing where I kept turning like this and smashing my knee, but it looked really cool. But I'd go in a circle and pap, 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 pap. And then one day my knee just was like this, and I was like, oh, I don't think I could do that anymore. And then I remember one time doing a dive –
into a worm or something?
Yeah, I was going to do a dive. So I went and did the dive, but instead of sliding down like this, I got stuck and I scorpioned.
Oh,
I
legs
like,
all
up. And I thought I was going to fucking never walk again. So I started to become a little bit more cautious with my B-boy moves. And eventually I learned how to windmill, but it was too late then.
That's some real shit, the windmill, rolling on your shoulders like
that. Oh, yeah, and I was doing seatbelts and these and. The seatbelts in these were easier to do than the actual keep doing it this way.
Tell me the truth. When you're walking through the house or whatever, and you're just by yourself, you ever bust out a pop and lock, you still bust.
Oh, yeah. It's funny when I have videos. There's videos out there of me, like even a few months ago. Some kid was at my house, and he said he's a B-boy. And I go, all right. So he did some shit, and then I stood up, and I did my little – I top rocked. And my top rock still looks good, so it looks like I'm about to do something, but I wasn't going to do it.
You're like,
I saw, man. Yeah, like, oh, she's going to dive into a windmill. I go, nah, I don't want to do it right now because I don't want to fucking break my hip, my head, or my knee.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Now, are you playing sports or anything like that in high school?
So, you see, I was a very small kid.
Mm-hmm.
I was
four. Yeah, you were a small. How tall are you now?
5'11".
Yeah,
I'm about 215.
You don't. Yeah. That's what I was going to say. I wondered if you were always, because you got some size to you, and I would imagine people didn't want to fuck with you then, but you were a little.
I was 4'11" and I weighed 75 pounds.
In ninth grade?
Yeah, and I dressed like that.
Yeah.
So understand what I'm working with.
Yeah.
And I'm already dealing with being Indian in 1984 and fucking nobody wanted to talk.
You're like, how can I make this worse?
I was trying to figure out how to get a Jerry curl. I wanted a Jerry curl so bad.
That's going to be the Photoshop for this episode.
Man, all the black dudes had Jerry curls, the really good ones. And they'd all be like this. Yo, check it out. And they go like this.
We're going to give you that.
Just to see their curls move. Yeah. Like, look. That's how they knew they got a good one. They're like,
yeah. It makes me laugh when Deion Sanders always said, look wet, but it was dry. He'd say that all the time, yeah.
Yeah, it was so.
Well, that was the old gangster look and everything with NWA with the Jerry curl.
Oh, that was way too late. That was way too late. This is 84. This is pre NWA.
How pre, though? 80.
It was about four or five years before them.
89, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Jerry curl.
Yeah, so I go to this.
Did you try to actually get one?
No, my mom wouldn't let me grow my hair. I did. I'll tell you a funny story about 11th grade. Anyway, so 9th grade, and I'm getting picked on even worse now in this school. A lot of bullying.
And again, race related?
Race related, yeah. And then, and because I look like that. And I kind of had a slick tongue on me, too. If you said something, I was like, I'll say something back.
Did you have a small crew at all that also looked like that you could at least come back and be, man, they're fucking
No, all my all my friends went to the other schools.
Okay. They were still at the
they went to
Catholic
they
school
went,
or
No,
other high
no,
schools.
They just wherever. They went wherever else. But I didn't really – like there was jocks in this school. There was guys that played basketball. There was guys that played football. And I – so to this day, I still fucking can't stand team sports.
Okay.
Like, what's your team? I go, my team is Go Fuck Yourself. That's my team. You ever heard of them? The Go Fuck Yourselves are really
Speaking
good.
Of teams, I want to say this real quick because this is just a shout out to you and it's on my mind. I'm sorry, it's just a complete sidetrack. Mm-hmm. But every time someone talks to me about you and I talk to them, I talk about how you sold out the Raptors arena.
Seven times.
And guess who can't do that? The Raptors. Back then, they could not fucking do that.
Now they can.
Now they can, but not back then. No. That's fucking beyond incredible.
It's pretty cool.
So good for you for fucking doing something a sports team couldn't. Look at that. There you go.
And then they won the world championship.
They did. So. They finally got it.
Yeah, finally. I mean, I'll be happy about that.
Let's take a quick break and tell you about our first sponsor, Liquid IV. When we push our body hard or we're just feeling run down, it's extremely important to take care of ourselves with the proper vitamins and nutrients. That's why Liquid IV created Hydration Multiplier plus immune support to maintain and strengthen your immune system. I've told you guys throughout the entire time I had COVID, and even still, I'm Liquid IVing it all day long. It had vitamin C, vitamin D, zinc. It's so good for you, so good for your system. Hydration Multiplier plus immune support is a cutting-edge blend of vitamin C, zinc, and Wellmune in convenient single-serving packets to help strengthen your immune system. Zinc, the second most abundant trace mineral in your body, supports immune cell health and function. Each packet is bursting with fresh, natural tangerine flavor. It tastes so good. This one's my favorite. Liquid IV can provide 2 to 3 times more hydration than water alone. It's the perfect balance to help you strengthen your immune system more quickly and effectively. And with every purchase, Liquid IV donates a serving of Liquid IV to someone in need. Liquid IV has donated 4+ million servings in response to COVID-19. Products are being donated to hospitals, first responders, food banks, veterans, and active military. Get your Liquid IV's Hydration Multiplier plus immune support in bulk at Costco or order online and get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code HONEYDEW at checkout. That's 25% off of anything you order when you get better hydration today using promo code HONEYDEW at liquidiv.com. Our next sponsor is Keeps. Now, the guys here at the studio are using Keeps. They're keeping that hair. You know, they're young. They're not like me with a full head of beautiful hair. They're young and losing their hair already. So they're using this product And Keeps works, man. Keeps offers a simple, stress-free way to keep your hair. 2 out of 3 men will experience some form of hair loss by the time they are 35. More than 50 million men in the U.S. suffer from male pattern baldness. Convenient virtual doctor consultation and medications delivered straight to your door every 3 months so you don't have to leave your home. It's low cost. The treatment starts at just $10 a month and Keeps offers generic versions. They have discreet packaging and proven results. Keeps has more 5-star reviews than any of its competitors. Prevention is key. Treatments can take 4 to 6 months to see results, so act fast. If you're ready to take action and prevent hair loss, go to Keeps.com. That's KEEPS.com/honeydew to receive your first month of treatment for free. That's Keeps.com/honeydew. KEEPS.com/honeydew to get your first month free. KEEPS.com/honeydew. Now, let's get back to the do.
Anyway, so, you know, this school, 9th grade, I'm getting bullied a lot. I'm getting picked on a lot, dealing with a lot of racism. I like girls. Girls don't like me. But then when the girls did like you, they had to, like, because it was only white girls, they wouldn't let you, they wouldn't let anybody know. Mm-hmm. So I used to walk home with this one girl and we would hold hands and we would make out and stuff. And then one day somebody saw her with me and was like, the fuck you doing with a fucking package? She let go of my hand. I was like, I'm not with him. I don't even know him. And I was like, what the fuck? And then that really hurt me. And then I liked this other girl and I wrote her like these really cute notes, you know. I think her name was Carla Hill. And I was like, I would kill for Carla Hill and, you know, stuff like that. And she was really cute. And she was an elf in the mall and the Santa display. You know what I mean? Yeah. I was like, she was really cute. And then she showed them to like these fucking dickhead guys. And they were making fun of me. They were a grade older than me. And I was like, oh, fuck you, bitch. All right. So I see. So now I'm like getting all this like, oh, I see what's going on here. And then I left school crying a lot in 9th and 10th grade. So I never got good grades. So in 9th grade, you're supposed to get 8 credits. I got 2.
2?
And then I had to go to summer school. I took 2 classes. I picked up 1. You know what I mean? So I got 3. I ended up with 3. And then you're supposed to get another 8 in 10th grade, and then I got 3. And I went to summer school, picked up another 1, got 4. So I had 7 credits at the end of 10th grade when you're supposed to have 16. Yeah. And then the school was like, you need to get out of our school.
Really? They kicked you out?
They sent me to the trade school down the street because they were like, you're never going to graduate here. Your marks are atrocious. I got 13% in typing.
Dude, and none of them are talking to you about what's going on with you. There's no counselor that reached out. Yeah.
Nobody fucking cared. You got to understand, when people talk about America in the 40s and 50s and dealing with racism, I get it. Because there's nobody you can talk to because the people you're going to talk to don't actually give a fuck because they're – no matter – even if they're not racist, they still don't have any empathy for you.
Right.
They're like, eh, I don't know.
So what are your parents telling you when you go home? Because I'm curious about the parenting back then versus the shit – because I feel like we coddle our kids hey, this and that. And so what do your parents tell you? Are they
my dad,
tough it up, defend yourself?
Yeah,
or what,
tough
what
it up,
of, yeah.
You know, defend yourself. My dad was a little guy and he had a bad temper. And he used to box in India. So he was like – he would fucking
– your dad's boxing, you're beatboxing.
Yeah, yeah, basically, yeah. And he would tell me, like, just fucking hit him. And I'm like, I don't know how to hit him. My dad was like, you need to learn how to fight. So right before when I changed schools, the school I was going to was like a tough school. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of tough kids, a lot of badass kids went there. And my dad was like, if you're going to that school, you might want to learn how to fight. So this kid that I hung around
with. He told you that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
This kid that I used to hang around with was a Canadian champ boxer. Willie. He was like, go to the gym with Willie. I was like, all right. And I ended up starting boxing and I fucking loved it. And I was actually pretty decent at it. Turns out I was like, I didn't know I had to. He goes, of course you fucking do it. My dad's just like, of course, I'm good at it. If I'm good at it, you're my kid. You're all going to be good at it. And because my brother was 6 years older, so you got to understand, when I start, I'm like 15 and a half, 16. You know, my brother's 21 or 22. He doesn't, mm-hmm. And my brother was a big guy. He used to read all those bodybuilding books and worked out and stuff. So he was, but it was like the 80s workout where you weren't like jacked. You were like just swollen.
Yeah.
But like
that
puffy.
Creatine puff.
Yeah. Yeah, like just kind of
Joe Weider
like
shit.
Chubby, but yeah, with like everything sitting in the right place. You know what I mean? Yeah. You didn't have like a jawline. You were still like,
yeah.
You know, but like you know, big guy. So people
and you're now 16. So how much have you grown? Are you still like?
No, I had grown now. So now I'm 147 pounds.
Holy shit! You put on fucking doubled your weight.
Almost. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I had a growth spurt in like end of ninth grade, beginning of 10th grade. Okay. I had a growth spurt, but it didn't make a difference because I was still skinny. You know what I mean? So, I start boxing. I get good at it. I go to the tough school. No, not one fucking problem in the tough school. Not one. Because the tough kids, the little gangsters in that school, they're not punks. They're not bullies. The bullies were at the other school. They were being dicks and bullying because they could. And what
the
are ones, you going to do?
The kids at your school would go kick the shit out of those kids. Yeah, they would never push them
Yeah,
around.
They would never come. That school would never come to this school and start a problem because they would get their ass whooped.
Right.
But my school was all the tough kids, and it was mostly Jamaican kids and like crazy-ass white trash kids. You know what I mean? And
what sort of trades, what are they teaching you at the trade school?
I took chef training for 2 years.
You did?
Yeah. So across
I wish from, I knew that was – I always – in my mind, when they talked about VOTEC, it was always – they never said anything about horticulture or shit.
Oh, we had a horticulture class.
Cars and mechanic shit, you know.
Yeah, they had all that there too. They had auto body. They had mechanic shop. They had machine shop. Yeah. That was in a different section of the school. Right where next to the chef training class was the bake shop class.
They baking. Had baking? God, yeah. I did
And then across a hall from us was the cosmetology class where you learn about hair and makeup and all
fast
that stuff.
Girls. Yeah, easy
and then
girls.
And then next door to them was the sewing class. And I used to hang out in the sewing class all the time because the teacher, Miss Kelly, rest in peace, passed away like a few months ago. But she was cool as shit. She would let me hang out in there because she was like a hippie. And she had married a black guy in like the 60s. So she was like hip as shit. And she was like, and she would swear, I don't give a fuck. You want to hang out here? Go ahead, hang out here. She goes, you're not going to be a chef anyway. Right? She's like, I know there's something better for you, Russell. I know. She was one of those people who believed in me.
I was going to ask you if you had someone. And
she was that one. She was the one. She would let me hang out. And there was all the hot chicks. Not hot chicks, but the cool girls were in that class. And I was like, there was some cute ones in there. I was like, all right. I got to hang around these chicks. And this is a different school. This is a different way of approaching things. So these girls are being nice to me now. Mm-hmm. And you're not the packy kid no more. You're just another guy in the school. You're like, wow, this is great. So – I go there. I take chef training. Me and my chef training teacher to this day are still friends. He still emails me, calls
Hell
me, texts
yeah.
me. Mr. Kohler, good guy. He ended up fucking one of the students and marrying her later on.
No.
Sorry, Freddie. He did. He was fucking one of the students. He ended up marrying her. And then she, you know, jacked him and took him for his shit. But whatever. I mean, you know.
Jacked him and took him for his shit. Oh, my God.
And in that school, it was funny because the kids were like so – you couldn't play with those kids. Like I had never seen that in the other school because I
– What do you mean by that? Like you couldn't fuck around with them or
– Yeah. No, like I could, but like when the teachers – like in the other school, you'd be like, Ryan, go to the office. I'm like, sorry, sir. I'm going to the office. In this school, you'd be like, go to the office. Go fuck yourself. You know, like that's what it was like in my school.
Right.
And it was like the teacher would be like breaking up a fight and then the girls would turn on the teacher. Don't fucking touch me. And then start slugging on the teacher. And I'm like, yo, what the fuck? So I got to see some like – I was like, oh, this is a different – that changed my whole thing. I was like, oh, I don't have to get bullied. These aren't fucking bullies. This is what real tough people do. And so it changed me altogether there.
I see. Okay.
I remember this one fight. This guy Eddie got into a fight with this Italian guy named Massimo. And Eddie had like a white – you know, everybody used to carry a rag in their pocket back then. He had a towel in his pocket. So they start fighting, and then Eddie takes a towel out of his pocket, throws it up in the air, and goes, and then Massimo looks and goes,
aww.
He goes,
that's old. That's our old snowball fight trick. You throw one up, somebody looks at you, just boom, in the fucking mouth. Yeah.
And I remember laughing so hard that fucking day, too.
That's a great one, yeah.
Yeah, so I never got beat up ever again after that when I changed schools. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it is.
I started boxing. Maybe that's why.
Yeah. But have you ever been in a fight?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've been in a lot of fights after that. Yeah. Once I learned how to fight, I was like, oh, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
So I got into it. I wouldn't instigate them, but if something popped off, I'd be like, let's go.
I mean, what's it like? Look, I've been in a shitload of fights, and I know what it's like for a person to want to take me off the face of this earth who's a stranger, has never met me, doesn't know a damn thing about me. But what is that like for – to face because of just the color of your skin. I'm sure I did something or whatever to them. It wasn't because I'm white. Right. So what is that like to have to fucking literally fight for your life?
Well, you're not fighting for your life. I already knew how to fight. So they would talk slick and I'd knock them out. It was literally one punch. Always one punch.
Oh, you would crush.
It was like, pop. That's it. All right. And I wasn't like a stomp you and beat. I was like, eh, he's already asleep. The fuck am I going to do with that? So it was always very quick. So I never had a problem with that. It was never like got into a knockdown drag out. Nobody knew how to fight. You realize that once you learn how to fight is that you go, nobody knows how to fucking fight.
That's right. Except today, you never know. It might now, be one of these MMA motherfuckers will snap your neck off.
I do jiu-jitsu now. So now I'm always like, and jiu-jitsu guys, there's like this brotherhood in jiu-jitsu. When you see somebody does jiu-jitsu, it could be the guy that hates your guts. You're like, okay, cool. What's up, bro? You know, it's like this whole thing that changes, you know? It's quite a lovely thing.
It sounds like it.
But anyway, so I ended up becoming president of that high school in 12th grade.
What do you mean? You ran?
I ran for class president. I won president.
You did?
Yeah. How hard was that? I was the only one who could make a fucking sentence. Everybody was dumb as shit in that school.
If everybody hated you.
Not in the second school.
Oh, the second school.
The second school, I was popular.
Okay.
I became popular because I was DJing and stuff then too already.
Where were you DJing?
I started DJing in 85.
That is early. You were records, huh?
Oh, yeah. My first two doubles that I intentionally bought were the show, Dougie Fresh and Slick Rick.
Yeah.
So I bought two of those because I intentionally bought it so I could scratch Get Fresh Crew. And then my first two turntables were these Techniques SLB 200s. They were belt drive. And the pitch was a wheel. There was no like up and down pitch. It was a wheel.
Damn.
So yeah, if you wanted to pitch up the record, you had to push with your finger. And then they would do it at this ungodly speed. So you'd have to learn how to do it with your finger so you could just mix that way. But then when you did do that, you'd stretch the belt. Belt would fall off the turntable. Your turntable would die. And then you'd have – and then I'd go to pick up my mom from work with my dad just seemingly like I wanted to go for the drive. But I would go to the – where they sold turntables, lift off the platter, steal the fucking belt, and put the platter back down.
I love that shit. So that made you a cool kid pretty much, popular?
Yeah, because now I knew music and I had the new music and I knew how to get music and I became that guy and I would – So I started having an identity now. Okay, I was the hip hop kid. Mm-hmm. I DJed. I used to break dance. I liked tagging a little bit. You know what I mean? So, and these tough kids in that school were all about it. They were like, oh, they had no problem with me because they were like, man, he's not fucking with us. We're not fucking. You know, he's cool. He's all says hi. You know, gives us whatever.
But did you run with any crews, or were you sort of your own guy?
I was kind of my own guy. I had like my best friend Marlon that I grew up with, Stacko the Big Black Wacko. That's why I was actually FaceTiming with him when I pulled in, as a matter of fact. We've been best friends for 43 years.
I love that. I'm still really tight with guys from like 6th grade, 7th grade.
43 years we've been best friends there. So he's a black dude, Jamaican as well. And then everybody I knew was black after that. It was just like – it was just so much easier. I never had any problems with them. You know what I mean? So I was like, oh, this is way better. No problems here. This is the best way to be. So.
Right.
I graduated in 88. I was class president. I remember there was somebody running for office in my town and their name was like something like – it was like Ken Russell or something. And I stole his signs and blacked out the Ken part and put the Russell ones all over the – I put Russell all over the school.
Vote for Russell.
Yeah. And then I don't know which I heard some political candidate say this on the news. So when we had to go from class to class to pitch ourselves to the students, I was like – vote for me. If I win, you win.
That's it. Thank you.
And then the other one's like, you know, they couldn't form a sentence. And if I win, I'm going to. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do shit. And then I came up with like these designs for the new school t-shirts. And I had it done graffiti style. Mm-hmm. So because, you know, I was a hip-hop minded kind of kid. So it looked pretty cool. Anyway, that's high school. And then I graduate. And then.
Go to college?
No. From the high school I graduated from, you weren't eligible to go to college.
Nah.
Because
grades don't count?
No. So in Canada, they had a system back then. There was 3-1, 4-1, and 5-1. 3-1 is basic level education, 4-1 is general, and 5-1 is advanced. And the school I went to offered nothing but basic. And you weren't
2-1.
Yeah, pretty much. And I'm no joke. One of the fucking English problems in 11th or 12th grade was unscramble the words and use them in a sentence. And one of the words was Ferrari. And I go, miss, this is
own three of these.
I said, this isn't a word. It's a name. And I got kicked out for challenging everything all the time. You gonna do?
But you are right.
Yeah.
It's not a word. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was so scared of my parents. I remember I got in some trouble with one of the teachers, and I got sent to the office, and the principal was going to call my parents. And then I got so fucking freaked out by it. I was like, you have no one to fucking like in my house. All right, motherfucker. I was like getting freaking out. I go, and he was a big older white man. I go, why don't you do this? Why don't you come to the boxing gym with me? We'll spar 3 rounds. If you beat me up, you can call my fucking parents. And I'm like, come on, motherfucker. Let's go. I'll fucking fight you to stop you from calling my parents. And he was like, this kid's crazy. He ended up letting me do an in-school suspension because he was going to suspend me for a couple of days.
So what do you do after high school?
I get this job working with my cousin. He was a subcontractor for like the gas company, and we had to go house to house and put these rain shields on gas meters.
Okay.
So I literally walked around.
And just put that plastic cover on
it. Cover on these rain shields on gas meters for the whole summer of 88. And then I got a job in a warehouse after that because that's what my life was doing. I was like
– And at this point, there's no comedy in your life or anything?
Comedy starts a year later.
Okay, but what's your influence? I know you – at this point, I'm sure you're watching comedies. You have some favorites.
You got to understand, 88, you're still not really watching it. You're listening to it.
True.
So I'm listening to records. I had all these Carlin records.
But no SNL or anything like that?
I didn't really care about it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You had to be home to watch that on a Saturday night, and I'm 18 years old. I'm trying to go to the clubs. I'm going to all these all-ages clubs. I started going to all-ages clubs at 15.
Really? Up there is that early?
Yeah, 15 all-ages clubs. You can go there. There's no alcohol.
Oh,
so.
No shit. Okay.
Club 404, you know, we'd go there. Club 404. It was fun times. Then there was all these like other little all-ages clubs. And then, you know, the nightclubs in Toronto, they used to serve alcohol till 1 back in the 80s. And then after 1, they would open it up to all ages.
Oh, okay.
So you go to like a nightclub. There was this after-hours club called Twilight Zone that everybody used to go to. And it was in downtown Toronto, and they used to just play house music. And this is when house music was underground still. So I would go there all the time. I remember going there in 85. I was 15, and I would go after 1. And I remember falling asleep in the club because I couldn't stay up that much. And because it would be house. Like, doot, 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 doot. Yeah. And I fell asleep sitting there. And then they put on Wop It by B-Fats. Remember? Wop It. It was a song by B-Fats, Wop It. And I remember sleeping, and then I hear Wop It. And I got up and started doing the Wop. And then I went back to sleep. And also back then I would see Lennox Lewis because I was boxing amateur and I would go to the tournaments. Now, let me just clear something up because I never actually had any fights. I would go to the gym, fight, spar with guys, get guys ready for fights. And then my coach would be like, I got you a fight in 2 weeks. I'm like, and I wouldn't show up for 3 weeks because I was like, I don't want to fight. I just wanted to train, learn how to fight. Mm-hmm. And I didn't mind like getting into a scrap. Like if you and I know each other, we're sparring. I'm good with that. And you want to beat the shit out of me? That's fine too.
You ever get knocked out like that?
I've been knocked down a couple of times. Yeah. Not out cold, but definitely knocked down.
What's it like?
Slowly do this.
You have that headgear on? Do you have it?
Like just and then like you hear you can slowly hear the sound.
Yeah, going away,
fading out. Yeah, that's what it's like. It's like being a vacuum.
And you're just done.
And, body shots are worse. Fucking worse.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen guys get it and they just go.
There was this guy, Larry, in my gym, big Jamaican guy, heavyweight. And I started at 147. I think I might have been 160 by this time. And his sparring didn't show up that day. So my coach is like, Russell, go spar with Larry. Larry's 220, 225 maybe.
Damn.
He's like 6'3". I think I'm 5'10 at the time, 5'9", 5'9", probably 5'9", 5'10". They go, Russell, spar with Larry. I go, fuck that. I make too much fun of Larry every day in the gym to get in the ring with this guy because I make fun of him because he was very Jamaican. And, oh, Russell, don't call me. Boy, and I talk so much fucking shit to me. And I'm like, I make fun of him. Like, I make fun of his English or whatever. But that's just, and he had a huge dick. And he would always walk around the dressing room with his dick hanging out. And I'm talking, this motherfucker's shit was this.
I'd be like,
I finished training. He goes, oh, come in, never shower. I go, because I'll shower at home. I don't fucking need you to see my peanut with that,
yeah,
with that fucking
real
elephant trunk.
It's going to take 9 of my dicks.
Yeah, yeah. He'd be like, yeah. Yeah. It's so, yeah. His dick could have been his sparring partner. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, so I'd make fun of him all the time. Anyway, his sparring didn't show up, so my coach is like, hey, go spar with Larry. I go, fuck that. Larry goes, no. I go, I'm not getting hit by a heavyweight. You crazy? He goes, he's not going to hit you. He's going to work on defense. And I go, So I can hit him. He's not going to hit me. Right. I go, all right. So I get in, put my headgear on, mouthpiece, everything. Get in the ring, ding, ding. I start lighting him up because I'm faster than him. I'm like, pop, 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 pop. And I start talking shit. Hey, Larry, you're really fucking slow. Pop, pop, pop. He's, you know, moving. He's just getting out of the way. He's not getting hurt by me and anything, but I'm getting confident because I'm hitting, I'm lighting him up. I'm hitting his body. I'm getting his head lightly. You know what I mean? I'm getting things on him. And then I'm talking so much shit. It gets to him. So I throw a jab. He dips, pop, right under. It hits me right in the liver. I'm like, I dropped and I made this noise. And my coach is like, get up. I go, fuck you.
Fuck you, bro. My liver's holding me down.
Yeah. I'm not getting up.
I've heard those thuds. That thud.
I always.
Pump. You just when see people, them bend when, and go, duh.
You know, guys like to fake, and I always go right there on them because I was going for the head. And I'm like, pop. You know how fucking sensitive that is?
Yeah. It's the. Yeah. It's so. Oh, God damn.
And I give it a light tap just to let you know you're right open. Oh, what the fuck was that? And I go, your body.
You're going to piss blood tomorrow, but you'll be fine after that.
Oh, yeah. Well, we just have good times going to the tournaments, though, because my coach understood after a couple of times. He set up fights, and I didn't go. He was like, all right, this fucking guy just wants to train. And so he would let me do all that. And then we'd go to tournaments, and I would see Lennox Lewis because he was at a different gym in a different city. And I just knew him as a tall, skinny guy. I would just, periodically see him. And then in 88, Lennox won the gold medal for the Canada in the Olympics. And I remember being at Twilight Zone. And I saw Lennox. He had just come back from the Olympics. I was like, hey, congrats, Len. He was like, hey, good to see you. Thanks, man. And subsequently, him and I became very good friends over the years.
Oh, that's great.
To this day, we're still very close. And I'll show you something really cool that he sent me in September. He was doing – I don't know why. I don't know why he sent this to me. He sends me this video of him, right? And he's talking about him and I growing up together. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. But why'd you send me this fucking video? So – he's doing this video about talking about people that grew up around him, and he's talking about Russell Peters, and he's wearing the suit. And
people that used to follow me go to some of my fights, and lived where I lived in Toronto was the famous Russell Peters, and he's a great comedian, my friend. I used to buy mixtapes off him when
I did. I used to sell mixtapes.
The ones you're talking about.
That's, look at the inside of that suit.
Oh, fuck yeah.
So,
he lined the jacket.
The lining of the jacket is the picture of
the
me and him.
Photo of you and him. Yes. That's fantastic. Yeah, so, yeah. And he didn't tell you that? Was it something you saw when he released it?
Yeah, no, he sent it to me. That's the picture in his suit.
Wow. That's fucking awesome.
Yeah, so it's pretty wild that, you know, you grew up with these kinds of people. And then you think about the people that grew up around – I think about the people that grew up in my neighborhood. Like, people go, fuck is Brampton for? I mean, like, Brampton came up with some – we had some good people come out of Brampton. Scott Thompson from Kids in the Hall. Michael Cera, mm-hmm. Brampton. The director, Little X.
Okay.
He does all of Drake's videos now, but he did like all the cool videos in the 90s. He did like Redman and he did Sean Paul videos. Okay. He's done all kinds of great videos.
You and Lennox.
Me and Lennox.
Damn.
there's a, that kid, he's a rapper now. Tory Lanez is from Brampton. Mm-hmm. Tristan Thompson is from Brampton.
Okay.
There's a lot of people from my city. And you'll notice most of them are black.
Like you said.
Except for Scott and Michael. Okay.
So comedy starts a year later for you.
Comedy starts a year later. We were going to this nightclub one time. This was in the summer of 89. I hadn't turned 19 yet. You had to be 19 to get in the club. But I never usually got carded because I usually kind of knew somebody. But we went to this club in Brampton and, of course, they fucking card and I couldn't get in. So we're hanging out in the parking lot of this nightclub, and I stand on my friend's bumper of his car, and I start making fun of people. And they're like, oh, you need to do stand-up. You really – and then my cousin Andrew said something. We were at a family thing, and I started making jokes. And goes, you know, you're really funny. You should really go do stand-up. And when my cousin said it to me, it rang true because my cousin's never fucking paid me a compliment before.
Yeah, then yeah.
He was like, you go to Yuck Yucks and do stand-up. And I'm like, really? And then my parents started giving me pressure. What are you going to do with your life? What are you going to do with your life? You're 19. You're going to be 19. You don't have a fucking career. You're no job, nothing. And I'm like, I don't know. I told my brother, like, what do you want to do? And, you know, my brother's 25 at the time. I'm like, I don't know. Everyone told me I should do stand-up. He goes, well, why don't you try stand-up then? Like, have you ever seen it live? I go, I have never seen it live. So he took me to like a couple of amateur nights to go watch. And when you watch – if you've only listened or watched professionals, it's intimidating. But if you go and watch amateurs, you're like, I'm better than that fucking guy.
Yes.
And that's how I gauged it. So I started watching live shows in September of 89. About a month and a half after I turned 19, I went and did it. And then here we are, 32 years later.
Dude, you're fucking just – I mean, it's funny to me. Sometimes, and this is no disrespect, I say Russell Peters, and people are like, Russell Peters. And I'm like, well, he's one of the top three fucking earners on the Forbes list for comedy in the world. And they're like, huh? And I'm like, he sold out Toronto Raptors.
He sold out Madison Square Garden.
Seven times, yeah. Madison Square Garden. He's Barclays one of the biggest comedians. And they're like, huh?
O2 Arena, Tom opened for me there.
Really? That one, yeah.
And in 2010, when I shot my green card tour special, I took Tom to England with me to open for me.
Where is your favorite place to perform?
Or
one of them. Let's not single anyone out.
I don't know because
people.
I really have a good time everywhere.
Yeah.
Auckland, New Zealand is usually 99% of the time the best show on every tour. I don't know what it is about Auckland, but the audience gets it. And they laugh with you on every fucking joke.
They're a good comedy audience.
Great comedy audience. I was just texting with Israel Adesanya the other night, talking on DMs. And I said, I'm coming to NZ next year. And he's like, oh, I'm coming. I got to be there for sure. And I was like, that's pretty fucking cool.
That is great. All right. So now that we've talked about what we talked about, advice to your 16-year-old self. What are you going back and telling Russell at 16?
Russell at 16, I'm going to tell him work harder.
That's interesting.
Focus more.
On what?
Everything that you're doing.
Okay.
Whatever you're doing, focus more. Pay attention more. And don't harbor all that anger that you had. I had a lot of resentment towards a lot of things when I was growing up. And I realized that, you know, I went through I went through a phase of fucking a lot of women, doing breaking a lot of women's hearts, doing dirty. And I would tell them, don't do that in the future. And pull out. Pull out, kid. Never trust a big butt and a smile. Truer words have never been said.
No doubt. That girl is poison.
Yes. And, and it's funny because I'll always call them – I don't call them Belle Biv DeVoe. I just call them Belle Biv because my current lady used to date Ronnie DeVoe.
Nah, so you got to get – we got to drop the D, bro. I go, BB.
The only D you're getting is mine.
That's fucking fantastic, dude. Thank you so much for coming on. We got to get you out of here.
Thanks for making me come. I mean, wait a minute. Son of a...
Please promote everything again. Your podcast, your website for the tour dates that'll
podcast, be... Podcast, Culturally Canceled with Russell Peters on iHeartRadio. You download it wherever you get your podcasts from. You know what's funny is I've done a fuckload of podcasts in my life. Done yours, Segura's, Joe's a bunch of times.
Your first one? That you're doing
yourself?
First
one that I'm doing myself.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, Rogan told me at the beginning of I did his podcast in July, and he was like, you need to do a podcast. I go, would you be a guest? He goes, yeah, I'll fucking be a guest. So I think he kind of lit the fire underneath me.
Good.
And I don't know. I've done so many. I've never actually listened to one. Isn't that funny? Yeah. I've never listened to a podcast in my life. I go to YouTube and watch clips of people's podcasts, right. But I've never actually sat and listen to one.
It doesn't matter anyway. Do what you want to do with it. That's the beauty of podcasting.
Yeah.
Don't take anyone's fucking notes.
Yeah.
And do exactly what you think is best.
It's exactly what mine is. Mine is just hanging out.
Listen to me. This right here, and I know you and I are on different fucking levels, but I will tell you
I don't look at anybody as a different level.
Well, I do, because I'm looking up, motherfucker.
Right.
And this may be the only thing we get to do in our careers that doesn't have someone weighing in somehow on it.
I'm pretty sure there will be eventually, depending on who distributes yours.
But
where's
it doesn't
yours?
Have to. I'm solo. I'm not with a network.
That's
but it doesn't.
That's
have
probably
to
the
be.
Way to do it.
Well, look, man.
But look at this. You're solo, and you have a studio with logos and signs and pictures. I'm in my backyard.
But you can be.
Right.
Look, Tom.
And mine is only audio.
Well, you got to have video, bro.
I know.
We're going to set you up. You got
to
have
that. I need to do that. I need to get better on that.
All right. Well, yeah. Tom's the guy. Tom Segura is the guy that brought me into YMH and then set me out. And, you know, I say all the time, you don't get the opportunity from a comedian and a friend like Tom and then throw up a shower curtain behind you. So,
I mean.
But you have the opportunity.
If that's your podcast.
Hey, content's content, bro. Thank you all, as always, for your support. Make sure you sign up on that YouTube channel. As always, Ryan.
You have a
Sickler.
Patreon channel?
I do have a Patreon. It's called The Honey Do With Y'all. That's what I was.
Nice. And his OnlyFans is coming up, guys.
I will have an OnlyFans eventually. Yeah.
Because the older it gets, the bigger his balls get. They will look like honeydews.
I'll show them to you. As always, Ryan Sickler on all social media, ryansickler.com. We'll talk to you all next week.